Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this first Saturday of February, the first day of February, in fact, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Gall, and I'm going to do something a bit different tonight. Since so much of the news this week was, well, admittedly, downright insulting to the intelligence of people who weren't public school indoctrinated over the last few years. The impeachment circus, for example, had one positive benefit. It seemed to show those who were paying attention just what a third-world cesspool the idiots running the United States House of Representatives have tried to get this country to descend into. Which leads to the obvious question. When it comes to pandemics and plagues, is this country and the world more at risk from what's coming out of Wuhan, China, or the District of Criminal Swamp? Well, Congress might eventually kill more, but the Wuhan coronavirus pandemic is probably more worthy of our attention. Given that the Bible talks a lot about plagues, and now the Wuhan coronavirus pandemic seems to be shaping up as one of potentially biblical proportions. And given all the booga 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 hype surrounding previous wannabe pandemics, like Zika virus, mousepox, bird flu, and who knows how many Ebola variants, to SARS, and a whole lot of misinformation, disinformation, perhaps covered up truth and actual lies surrounding it, to the point where there's so much fog, I think a lot of people don't quite know what to believe. So hey, let's change the channel and see whether there's football game on. And unfortunately, there's a lot of that going on, too. So what I want to do today is talk about a number of things associated with what we can see when we look out at what's going on. Now, let me say this up front, usual disclaimer, but it needs to be more emphatic this week. What we're going to talk about is not medical advice. No, your host doesn't pretend to be a doctor or claim to give medical advice of any kind. I do occasionally teach and quote scripture, but the beauty of that is you can check it for yourself and see if it's true. And my consistent advice there is, basically, read what it actually says, as opposed to what men say it should have said, and then make your own assessments, because ultimately, each of us will be held responsible for what we do, and how we do it, and so forth. I do, however, believe, and I'll say this up front too, that we're fearfully and wonderfully made. Scripture tells us that. We have an immune system, which is a marvel, no, not of evolution, but of design, intelligent design. It has a number of features to it that honestly would have had a whole difficult time evolving independently. Kind of like a wing. One wing by itself is useless. Eyeballs are the same way. It's often called irreducible complexity by those that don't believe complex designs can be the result of a whole series of incredibly improbable, to the point of being impossible, accidents. I spent most of a career, folks, designing complicated digital storage mechanisms, and one thing I learned is, unless everything is right, they don't work, and they certainly don't build themselves. Mankind still, by the way, has never been able to design a machine that can reproduce itself. My guess is we'll see AI, Skynet, and the Terminator before that happens. All of which essentially indicates something is going on with the intelligent design of human beings, and indeed all the other animals, that mankind still hasn't quite figured out. That does certainly imply the existence of a creator, and if that's true, it leads to an even bigger question in a way. Did he write a book for us? And likewise, is there some advice in the book that ultimately we can't afford to ignore? Well, I'm of course suggesting, and have been as long as I've been doing this show, that the advice is good, that it's confirmable, and that it is a matter of life and death. Literally, it amounts to choose life, if we understand what Scripture says. And that basically is the point of most of my efforts on radio. Go study it for yourselves. See if these things are true, and especially nowadays, it's time to apply them. And that means in a lot of cases, yeah, come out of her. Don't participate with the sins. Don't partake of the various things that result in the plagues so that we can be healthy, so that we can be happier, so that we can walk in obedience, so that we can do all the things essentially that we were, yes, designed to do. Now, where I want to go next, of course, is obviously things associated with the Wuhan coronavirus and some of the elements there. Let me start with just an item or two out of the news that I've talked about over the last day or two. For one, Russia now has closed its borders, its eastern border, to China. as the killer coronavirus, according to the Daily Mail, has spread to every region of China. The death toll is up to, pushing 200 officially, pushing many, many times that many if you believe the non-official conspiracy reports. Remember, though, in China, the government has essentially threatened people that dare to tell the truth about what's really going on, because if you survive the virus, we'll put you in jail for 3 to 7 years, one of the things that's coming out of there. But at least 8,300 people officially have the deadly infection, well, the potentially deadly infection, but let's put it this way, it's a lot more deadly than measles, for crying out loud, or some of the things that children are being told, booga, 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 vaccinate for or else. All right, well, I could go through a whole bunch of statistics. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on those yet. We'll come back to at least a couple of elements of them. But basically, it's now being seen worldwide. We have in the United States and half a dozen other countries the first official reports of human-to-human transmission within the borders of the United States. First one came out of Chicago. There are others, lots of other countries where that's been seen as well. Japan in particular, a case of an airplane that came in with about 200 people plus on board. Three were later confirmed to have the virus. And interestingly, of those, two at least showed no symptoms whatsoever until later. And that's one of the major concerns here about this particular virus. It can go for a long time. How long? Well, there's one of the factors that's being lied about. It seems to be at least a week to 10 days, and perhaps as long as 2 weeks, that people can remain very contagious and without even being aware that they are contaminated or are carrying the disease, and in the process, a whole bunch of other people can catch it. And that's one of the other critical elements here. There is a thing called R-naught or R-sub-zero, which I've talked about before. You can find it online. But it is the ratio of how many people catch the disease from each new infected person. Some of the most infectious diseases in history have R-naught values that are at or around 2.0. Notably, the Spanish flu that killed millions of people in the early 1900s was in the vicinity of 2.0. Now, how high is R-naught for this new one? One study out of Great Britain, led by infectious disease specialist Neil Ferguson, estimates that R-naught for coronavirus is 2.6. But wait, there are other estimates out of China. The Guangzhou Provincial Center for Disease Control and Prevention says the R-naught is at 2.9. Researchers at Lancaster University in the UK, however, say the value might even be much higher, between 3.6 and 4. So, the old story goes like this. Remember, if each person tells two people and those two people tell two people, you have 4 and then 8 and then 16. Well, everybody knows the powers of 2 if you've done computer programming. Hey, how about if R-naught is not 2 and each generation doesn't multiply by a factor of 2 but by 3? Now the generational numbers go 3, 9, 27, and whoa, all of a sudden, it's a whole lot bigger, a whole lot faster. And if it's above 3, for crying out loud, that is truly an astronomical number that scares the living you-know-what out of epidemiologists. So this is one of the things that people aren't being told. Mike Adams has done a number of stories over the last few days pointing out that when it comes to self-reporting of symptoms, which is what a lot of people are being asked, right, flying back into the United States, hey, you got any problems? Well, no. People can honestly say they don't have any issues, but they can still be carrying the disease. They can still be contagious. They can get off the plane. They can roam around for a week, infecting who knows how many other people, who in turn can infect who knows how many other people. And get this, not only can you not see it with screens of things like body temperature, but even lab tests early on might not confirm the existence of the virus in a carrier. So this is really amazing and potentially, at least, deadly stuff. Is that a good reason for panic? Not necessarily, and that's what most folks are urging. Don't panic. But what concerns your host is the following, folks. And I have talked about this. Now we're seeing a beta test, a case in point. Don't panic. We'll have our captive news media outlets, the propaganda ministries of truth, lie about it. Oh, nothing to see here. Move along, move along. Don't worry. Up until, oops! Now we can't cover it up anymore. Everybody knows 6 or 7 neighbors and people in their grade school that have got the utter disease, and there's therefore utter panic. What else happens? Well, presumably, if we still had intelligent connection of the dots, those that have been lying for so long and got caught with their pants down would suffer a lack of credibility, too. But I have a suspicion what will happen is that with the utter panic will come utter fix it at any cost, and that we can see where that leads to. So what I want to do first, before I come back to coronavirus and some of the things that are going on, some of the implications, is to lay out a few other elements. These aren't new things. These are things that we've talked about here on this show and other shows that your host here has done for a long time. Things like the inevitable economic meltdown, things like the absolutely beyond insane impeachment of a president, basically for the reason that he dared to point out criminality of somebody who was a predecessor in office, the previous vice president and his nepotist son. Well, he was the nepotist. The son was the beneficiary of the nepotism, Hunter Biden. And it's okay to commit the crimes. It's okay to commit acts of treason. If you're Hillary Clinton, you can deep six disk drives, bleach bit them, and then hammer them into non-existence. You can have your compadres, your comrades, probably better put, in the FBI help you out that way. You can get the Brennans and Comeys of the intelligence community to cover for you and lie for you. They can even commit perjury and get away with it. But how dare you point out, if you're not a politically correct president anyway, that there's criminality going on, and there's a treaty with Ukraine, and so you ask them to take a look at it. Well, we don't have a constitution, but we sure know what impeachment is, even if most Americans are ignorant of the process and the fact that it's not equivalent to getting rid of a president. It's just how the socialist Bolsheviks see one step along the way. Okay, so there's one other element. We've talked about the climate BS. I call it AGWBS, anthropogenic global warming, which causes CO2, and, your SUV is causing the planet to literally implode in a cataclysm of higher temperatures. When, in fact, some of us are saying that, if the sun really does cool off and we have a global solar minimum, which the cycles going back hundreds, even thousands of years suggest is a natural occurrence, and we seem to be heading down, which are we going to have? Non-existent man-made global warming or sun-induced global cooling? By the way, what happens when we get global cooling? Well, shorter growing seasons, more people freeze to death, more people starve to death in the shorter growing seasons. You also get moves towards war and similar things because people tend to panic when they starve, too, just like they panic if they think they're going to die from some dreaded disease. So all kinds of things on the table. I want to start with a story that I alluded to actually last week. So in one extent anyway, this show is part two of a series about things to be aware of in such a time as this. This is by All News Pipeline and William B. Stecker about the monstrously evil political agenda, one of the worst of all time, having to do with the socialist Bolsheviks, a.k.a. masquerading as Democrats in 2020. And it amounts to nothing less than the impoverishment, enslavement, and extermination of much of the human race. Now, at the point where this story came out, coronavirus was not yet a really big deal. As a matter of fact, it maybe the author didn't even have it on the horizon. He was talking about climate hysteria, Trump derangement syndrome, and so forth. And Wuhan hysteria was, certainly known in China, but not widely reported outside of it. And here's where it starts, and this is why I wanted to begin with this basic recap. The environmental extremists, he said, continue to chant their monotonous mantra about the existential threat. Now, there's that word. Let's pause there for a second. Existential threat. What is that? Well, basically, that has nothing to do with facts. An existential threat is anything that booga, 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 the leftists who want to control every aspect of your lives tell you, if we don't control your life, you're going to die, and so will all of humanity. Of course, the truth is, that's the agenda anyway. You got a lot of people that want to see 6-7 billion people exterminated. Because that way they'll have more room for their Learjets. Well, they won't have Learjets anymore. Those are pretty well passe. Their G5s and above and their Citations and so forth, which they can burn all the carbon they want, but you, on the other hand, will huddle in your hovel if you're allowed to live at all and pray that they maybe let you have power for 2 hours a week if they allow it at all. So we have the language of the environmental extremists. Now, what's interesting is there was a story that came out just today out of the Congress, essentially, where a letter was written to Sundar Pichai, the director of Gulag, and especially YouTube, saying that we have to, put a kibosh on the climate skeptics. What's a climate skeptic? That's anybody that doesn't believe the BS we're peddling. Someone who suggests that just maybe the sun might have more to do with climate than good old-fashioned carbon dioxide, which plants need to survive, and it produces more green things and more food. And, of course, that's exactly the opposite of what they ultimately want. And what was the chairman of the committee that wrote this letter to Sundar Pichai demanding that Big Brother's political, you know, propaganda arm do? Answer: eliminate through a bunch of techniques what they call dangerous misinformation. We call it the truth in a lot of cases when they're lying to you. And we pointed out, for example, that years ago, East Anglia, the climate research unit in Britain, got caught fudging the figures. And they've been manipulating temperature data, trying to make it appear that man-made global warming, which actually didn't exist at all, we haven't had warming for a decade or so, actually closer to two at this point, was an existential threat. And guess what, folks? A lot of people began to see through that, especially, of course, as the winters cool off. And even though they will tell you a weather event does not a climate change make, when a whole bunch of weather events seem to go in the opposite direction of what they're pushing, well, we get rid first of the anthropogenic term. Most dumbed-down school kids don't know what it means anyway. It's man-made. And they just say, well, it's climate change, which, of course, is true. The climate is changing. It's just changing for different reasons and in the opposite direction than they've been lying to us about. And if you point that out, you're a climate skeptic, and you need to be deep six. Well, at least cut off from access to the Internet and YouTube and the ability to find honest answers to questions with searches. Because, you know, we will tell you if it's an existential threat. You don't have any business even worrying your pretty little heads about it. Stecker and the rest of his piece, just to kind of set the rest of the stage here, the true nature of the leftist obsession can be seen in their abortion agenda. They've butchered 60 million babies in the U.S. alone. Abortion worldwide is the leading cause of death. And, of course, you have the LGBT agenda, which is all about lowering birth rates and increasing death rates. And the indoctrination of school kids has gone from the merely insane to the outright evil and downright demonic. Even vampirism is now being portrayed as wholesome and normal. Things that would have been considered X-rated to even be talked about on a primetime TV show 15 years ago or so are now being taught to grade school kids. You have grotesque drag queens reading to little kiddies in public libraries so that they can grow up to be more of the same. No U.S. president has spoken out about a whole lot of things that are on the leftist agenda, like the wildland map, all of which, says Stecker, ultimately are attacks on the serfs out in flyover country and a deliberate attack on assault on property rights. Same thing, of course, goes for the disarmament agenda and you name it. So I start off with this article because ultimately, when they use the term existential threat, realize that it's, well, more often than not, if it's coming from a leftist, it's a great big lie. It's all about disinformation. And let me now segue back to the coronavirus from Wuhan via a quick look at a piece that came out from the New American, Rebecca Terrell, back in May. I found actually May of last year, so there you go. Almost, well, three-quarters of a year ago, having to do with the question of, we'll see it real soon now, forced vaccinations. This piece was called, Is It Time for Big Brother to Become Your Doctor? And it says in the subheading here that claiming that vaccines are safe and that diseases they prevent are killers, government is pushing its mandates, including immunization, and, of course, another great big whopping lie. Just like climate crisis didn't cut it, well, maybe now we need something new. If the climate crisis didn't result in the complete kind of control over people's lives that we want and are going to have, and we're willing to kill all kinds of people to do it, maybe the biggest dangerous existential threat to your life ever, via the booga booga booga, fill in the blank, but we've got Wuhan now, virus might do it. Now, here is the interesting part, folks. This story about Big Brother becoming your doctor and forced vaccinations has to do with something you may remember. It's certainly fallen off the radar, given that we've got more booga booga today. Recent measles outbreaks, as of about a year ago in the United States. Ready for this? 555 cases of measles in 20 states, as of April 11th by the CDC, ignited extreme reactions from various Big Brother officials. The governor of Washington, Jay the Communist Inslee, declared a public health emergency because, ready, they had 31 cases in two counties. Now, think about it. Let's do a quick bit of compare and contrast here. What's going on in China? How many people have really got a disease that is admittedly a whole blankety-blank and you-know-what lot worse than measles? People are dying from it in droves. Almost nobody dies from measles anymore. What you get if you have the measles is lifelong immunity. Probably a stronger immune system as well. A lot of childhood diseases, in other words, have the effect of strengthening childhood immune system response. You grow up never having to worry about mumps or measles or chicken pox again and are healthier for it. Unfortunately, or maybe as intended, the vaccines don't give that same immunity. But here's another thing that's different. Don't worry your pretty little heads about a disease that has an R-naught of over 3 that is 83 to 91% effectively transmitted from one infected individual to another. You can't see it during the period of 1 to 2 weeks when people are essentially carriers and capable of being transmitters of that disease. But when you get it, you'll know it, well, a few weeks later. Compare that to the measles. Give me a break. Isn't this kind of ridiculous? Says the story, implying that victims are dropping like flies. No, not because of Wuhan, but that measles will soon decimate entire cities without extreme protective countermeasures. Yes, we must strap you down, vaccinate your child. New York is going to force vaccinate, force you to pay fines if you don't do it. Can you imagine, folks, what a real infectious disease might result once they finally admit that it's true and that it really is a bigger problem than measles ever dreamed of being. And news outlets, of course, back when the measles was booga, 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 you got to violate your child's body and inject them full of stuff. Don't worry about the side effects. If there were any, we'd lie about it. Well, we do put them on the inserts, but we're not going to tell you about the other things that are in there, the adjuvants, the thimerosal, the mercury, and so forth, or the chance of autism, because we have indemnity against that. Thank you, VAERS. And that most cases that were reported weren't extreme at all. Furthermore, this is interesting, the media opportunists fed the flames. The Bloomberg editorial board hopes that these outbreaks, quote, may finally be scaring sense into parents who believe the myths, they're vaccine deniers, that those vaccines may cause seizures, autism, mercury poisoning, or death, even though a whole lot of children did, in fact, get all of those things. And in a fit of yellow journalism at its finest, a Texas CBS affiliate featured an alarming picture of a baby supposedly suffering from measles, but it turns out the baby was suffering from the side effects of the measles vaccine. Don Newfield, the mom, wrote that the media decided to use my kid as a poster child for the measles outbreak, when in fact, the irony, Will doesn't have measles in the picture. This is his adverse reaction to taking the supposedly safe MMR shot. Let me say it again as we go to the break here. If they are willing to lie about coronavirus, Chinese government, of course, is probably grossly underestimating the number of infected people, the number of deaths. You can look online, you can see the videos, well, up until Gulag takes them down anyway, and get a much better indication there. Chinese government is threatening people into submission and silence if they don't just plain die before they can talk about it too much anyway. And yet, they are hyping a basically non-existent measles problem and using it as an excuse to say we got to force vaccinate your children. Let me say it again. No crisis, no existential threat up until, it's worse than we ever admitted. We've been lying through our teeth, so believe us now, booga booga, we're all going to die. You better take the vaccine. If they're willing to do it for measles and they make such a big deal about that, again, how much more so when we actually get to something which potentially is a real, actual, maybe even existential threat. Again, we don't know, but part of the point that I'm trying to make here today is you're not going to hear the answer or the truth either way from the media up until it may very well be too late. So be aware of it, be watchful, be paying attention. And as for the rest of the things we need to do, we'll talk about some of those when we get back here after the bottom of the hour break. Stay with us.
Before they are born, stand up and be counted.
Back now, folks, to the second segment of the show for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Call, and let's continue to cut through the fog of propaganda, misinformation, and, yeah, outright lies or withholding of valuable evidence. In any case, when we went to the break, I was talking about the, compare and contrast between a true existential threat that might or might not be, like the Wuhan coronavirus, which has incredible numbers indicating a potential, well, let's just be blunt here, almost certainly bio-engineered weapon being released on a population, and something that's ultimately a childhood disease, very much under control, no, not because of vaccines, but because of things like indoor plumbing, soap and water, and the ability to get good natural supplements. Even cod liver oil, which became a big deal because it was high in vitamin A, in the early 1900s. And tended to make a huge dent in some of these childhood diseases. But what I want to do is go back to the compare of what people are told not to worry about, which is the possibility of dying from a genuinely infectious epidemic, to the need to vaccinate your children against something that isn't going to kill them, probably isn't even going to hurt them. I remember having looked at a Brady Bunch episode TV sitcom from a couple decades back. They were saying, hey, measles is a great way to get to stay home from school while they're playing Scrabble or something like that. And, the video clips of that were even ultimately deep-sixed, disincentivized, I guess you'd say, by Gulag. Nevertheless, the witch hunt continues, says this piece from the New American's Rebecca Terrell in May of last year. Certain European countries have already begun to fine parents for refusing to have their children immunized. Again, we're not talking about deadly diseases. We're talking about benign childhood illnesses that at least a lot of people, and that would include your host, having become convinced of some of the data I've seen, would suggest are good for kids to have because they develop lifelong immunities and a stronger immune system. All of that in mind, says the author, what are we to think about media insistence that vaccines are effective, safe, and, of course, 100% harmless? Should we demonize, even fine and jail parents who opt for natural over artificial immunity for their children? I'm going to suggest here that, you know what, those that have natural immunity may find, especially if they're eating healthy and avoiding things that the scripture and good science, as opposed to the kind that you're being force-fed on TV, say you shouldn't be eaten anyway, from genetically modified frankenfoods, aspartame, and lots of other poisons, glyphosates and the like, to, of course, pig and shellfish. They will at least tell you sometimes don't eat shellfish if there's a mercury outbreak, because, of course, the bottom feeders that God designed to be the ocean floor cleanups, you know, like pigs are the eaters of the dead on the land, are going to be the first creatures to get all the nasty stuff that you don't want to get. So if you don't eat them, you won't get it. But this is an interesting point. Look at Merck and Company's MMR2 vaccine as an example, said the author. As for any vaccine, they say vaccination with the MMR2 may not result in protection in 100% of vaccines. Whoa. So here's a case where you're not even allowed to quote the official insert on the package if you want to stay on some of these politically correct socialist media platforms. The disclaimer seems to belie the universal insistence that the drug is 100% safe and effective. How do you explain it? Well, here is the official inside baseball medical terminology. Now, this is important, so listen carefully. Quote, an effective vaccine, put quotes around the word effective there, as defined by researchers, is one that leads to the development of antibodies That would be part of your immune system response to the thing that you were injected with. In other words, your body sees an invading virus or organism and it says, protect the body against this, and it develops antibodies to it. And the effective vaccine leads to the development of antibodies after it's been injected into the bloodstream, says Dr. Sherry Tenpenny of NMA Media Press. It's important to understand that with the words effective and protective in vaccine research are not synonymous. Effective does not mean protective for a bunch of reasons. Now let's pause there for a second. What is the body developing antibodies to? Well, it's whatever it is you've been injected with. Suppose that the actual disease that comes is slightly different genetically. Easy case is the flu. It's a different variant of some kind of flu. We got H5N1, H2N this, and so forth. And if the guesstimates of those who put the vaccines together were wrong, you develop antibodies to the things that you're never going to actually see, or your body's not going to have to worry about. You don't necessarily have antibodies to the actual flu, or the actual coronavirus, or the actual fill-in-the-blank that is the one that eventually attacks your body. So the presence of effective indicators like antibodies to who knows what, but not necessarily the disease you need to be protected against, isn't that great of a protection. So yeah, vaccines can cause the patient to produce antibodies, that makes them effective, but they cannot guarantee protection from a disease, especially if it's a different disease than the one you thought you were being protected from. That explains why kids who get the shots still contract infections, whether it's measles or mumps or chickenpox or any number of things. We've seen all kinds of examples of late. Okay, what about herd immunity? I've spent a lot of time on this in the past. I tend to think that as someone who understands statistics and mathematics, herd immunity is another, well, let me just be as kind as I can, complete line of bovine scatology, bad science. And again, case in point, think of the flu vaccine. If the researchers guess right, let's say they put in the shot five different possible strains of flu, and they inject you with it, and the vaccine is effective, meaning you get some antibodies to those five things, but the virus that eventually spreads isn't one of those five, well, you're not only open to the disease, matter of fact, you may be more open because your body's been wasting its effort and its energy developing antibodies to something it's not going to see. So when the real one comes around, gives it kind of a left hook, uh-oh, caught me off guard there. And maybe that explains why, at least anecdotally, so many people, like yours truly, that never get the flu shots, never get the flu either. Yeah, it helps to be healthy otherwise, to eat good stuff, avoid pigs and shellfish and poisons like aspartame and glyphosate and all these other immunosuppressants. But ultimately, think about this. Here comes the herd immunity thing. Let's suppose everybody in the entire society, we mandate these things, dutifully takes their shots and develops effective antibodies to some strain, H5N1. Well, what happens then? They're not immune to H27N534, whatever it might be. And guess what happens? Everybody isn't immune. It spreads like crap through a goose, if you will, quoting General Patton, through the population. It's an oversimplification, admittedly. But a little bit of conditional probability understanding will essentially point out that if you're worried about herd immunity and you have an immunity to one thing but not an immunity to another thing, that the thing that is more likely to propagate through the herd is the thing that the herd is not immune to. Not really that complicated. Step back. All right, I mentioned vitamin A and cod liver oil. There are certainly other things that have been shown to be effective when it comes to providing a boost to your immune system. Things like vitamin C, vitamin D3 with K2, antivirals like one of the best, silver, whether it's colloidal or ionic, zinc to strengthen your immune system. Again, understand this is not medical advice, not even scriptural advice in this case. It's just a distillation of decent science and an understanding that a healthy body and a healthy immune system does a better job at what it was designed to do, which is fight off disease. Back to the story here with one or two more points. Regarding the vaccine safety issue, they're no different from any other FDA-approved medication, all of which carry risks. Now, you can't say that anymore. Gulag will probably try to deep six any searches, and you know what will happen on socialist media and so forth. For example, again, they say, look at MMR2 from Merck, and note that adverse reactions observed in clinical trials, in the insert, include both the mild, fever, headaches, dizziness, diarrhea, vomiting, yeah, you know, happens all the time, well, unless you stay healthy and don't get things like that, and all kinds of severe effects, too, like diabetes, mellitus, arthritis, encephalitis, meningitis, pneumonia, and anaphylaxis, acute, somewhat deadly, occasionally anyway, allergic reaction. Now, here's the real kicker, folks, and this is also going to go to the issue of, the elephant in the room, forced vaccinations. Vaccine manufacturers have not got a huge incentive to research further. We have a vaccine. It's been approved by the FDA. We spent a lot of money. Now it's time to rake in the big bucks, and hey, if they get mandated, so much the better, because the federal government protects them from virtually all liability. And when they say virtually all, they mean virtually all. If the manufacturer introduces a bad batch, if somebody doesn't store it properly, it's not transported properly, if something happens to it, it gets contaminated, hey, it's not our fault. And guess what? We don't have to pay. In 1986, Congress established the taxpayer-funded, who else, National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, NVICP, under the Department of Health, Sick, and Human Services, which has since paid out over $4 billion in claims. And guess what? That's a tiny fraction of the actual damages. Instead of suing the companies that produce and sell potentially dangerous products, like you find, well, your host is big on airplanes. I saw the entire airplane industry nearly destroyed by product liability lawsuits. My favorite case, a Cessna that was built in the early 1930s, flew for over 50 years safely, eventually crashed, and, well, guess who has the deep pockets? Not the person that was injured, not the mechanic that signed off on it or maintained it, but Cessna. So they sued it, and they won a huge damage lawsuit for a product that successfully, safely flew people around the country for 50 years. Compare that to a product that may kill a whole lot of people, may give children autism, but you're not allowed to say if that's even true. If there are studies that show it, well, we're not going to talk about those. We're going to make sure it doesn't get reported by socialist media platforms or big brothers. Well, they depend on advertising revenue from these same big pharmas, don't they? Instead, we're not even going to allow them to be paid off in court. So instead of suing companies that produce and sell the vaccines, like if they were an airplane manufacturer, a car manufacturer, or, heaven forbid, a firearms manufacturer that might protect you from, the people that are going to come and do all this bad stuff to you, vaccine-injured victims and their families are forced to petition HHS. Pretty please, oh, big brother, will you allow us a tiny bit of compensation because our child is now going to be an invalid, a vegetable, whatever it might be, forever? A process that disillusioned claimants have discovered to be heavily weighted against them. To put it mildly, the nonprofit Children's Health Defense put it this way. HHS has turned a basic administrative compensation process into a highly adversarial, lengthy, expensive, traumatic, and unfair imitation of a court, it's not, for vaccine victims and their attorneys. And basically what happens is, if you're lucky, if you agree to keep your mouth shut, you might get payment for a little bit of what you had to deal with as a result of a vaccine injury. Now, let me ask the question. Do you trust these same people to protect you from a virus that they're going to deny even is a problem up until the point where, well, they don't have any vaccine yet, so what can we sell you? No point in telling you to booga, 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 be afraid, be very afraid. But once we do, now all of a sudden it'll be time to panic. Do you get the idea here? The story goes on to talk about how I'm notably absent from the tables of things that have been paid off for and covered in more detail, autism. Many physicians are now linking it to thimerosal, a mercury preservative used in a number of vaccines. No, except you're not allowed to say that, of course. And Dr. Marie McCormick acknowledged that the CDC, quote, wants us to declare vaccines to be safe, and she blatantly admitted, we're not ever going to come down that autism is a true side effect, unquote. So, picture something much worse. Remember, measles is a huge booga, booga, booga problem, but coronavirus, well, not yet anyway. Two-thirds of vaccine safety researchers, sick, do receive industry support and sponsorship, and I have a suspicion that the other third probably aren't going to get any book deals or widespread coverage. And, okay, there's a lot more in the piece, but I think you get the picture. I keep coming back to the basic question. Who are you going to trust? What are we going to see here? And furthermore, we'll close with just a couple of observations. Now, this bridges the gap between the liars and the conspirators, and it goes like this. I mentioned right up front the R-naught number. In other words, how each one infect two, or is it each one infect three? The transmissibility rates and R-naught, so far, estimates, because we, you know, only have a few thousands or maybe tens of thousands of victims to take a look at, but they range from about 2.6, which is high, but not the highest ever, to 3.8, which is way up into the category of astronomical. The WHO finally got around to declaring a world health emergency. I forget the exact terminology, but I know it wasn't a problem. Now it is a problem, and they've declared other things to be a problem that weren't nearly as much of a problem, it would seem, as this one. But wait, there's more, because there's yet another element, actually several elements, of things to be concerned about with respect to this virus or potentially engineered bioweapon, one of which is the mutation pattern. And this isn't getting much press at all. Dave Hodges has some second-generation figures that he's reported on. I don't have a second source on him here. But essentially, it's been confirmed, he says, that we have cases of swine to human, obviously. And by the way, I have a suspicion that these bioengineered weapons, because of the transmissibility, in other words, jumping the species barrier between swine or pigs and humans, a lot of these things tend to be engineered from various viruses that affect pigs. Anyway, what we've seen already, it is being reported, is transmission from swine to human, then back to swine, and back to humans. And along the way, what we're seeing is the potential, at least, for mutations, sometimes more than one set of mutations. In other words, there may be one more than one variant of this disease out there in different places. And we may see as transmission patterns and travel patterns around the world demonstrate what's going on, different pockets of different variants of the same disease cropping up in different places. What does that say about effective vaccines for one, but maybe not for others? Now, transmissibility rate is open to some debate as well. But the variance is what's key. And again, I mention it because there are many both manufactured strains and subsequent variants of the virus, which speaks to the fact that everyone who contracts this thing, as some are saying now, has become a biological weapon. And if the transmission rate is close to 4, that means almost 4 people on average are exposed before the original carrier becomes symptomatic. They don't even know it. Acting director of FEMA has requested President Trump enact medical martial law. Some are saying, oh, that's reasonable. You know what, folks? If it's booga, booga, booga as bad as it might be, that's perhaps true. But it does make you wonder, why have not the travel bans against Chinese airlines in the United States and so forth been more complete sooner? But at the R-naught of 3.8, that's among the highest of big diseases on records. I'm sure in some of the bio labs they have higher rates, but you know, for a good bioweapon, you got to have all of the above: high infection rate, high mortality rate, high R-naught transmissibility rate. Oh, and better still, if the victims don't even know they've got it until they've infected all of those people. All of this is alarming, of course, and the decision seems to have been made, a number of people are suggesting. Certainly it's obvious among the communist Chinese to lock down as much information about what's really going on as possible. And it's also inaccurate, as I pointed out, to point to a single virus because things are rapidly replicating and mutating. So there may be not just 4 variants so far that might have been identified, but many more than that, possibly enough that, think about this, governments around the world are saying, oh, let's get this new disease into the lab and see what we can do with it. Kind of like a kid with a new bunch of Legos. This first-generation bioweapon released on Wuhan may be the start of just others. All right, educated guess is the bottom line, and that's the point that Hodges makes. It's one that I will emphasize as well, because if you look at an exponential growth rate, an R-naught of 2 versus an R-naught of 3 produce dramatically different results. If we have different mutant strains, R-naught could vary. Infection rates, mortality rates, all of those things could vary. Death symptoms vary. One of the things that China's been caught doing already is declaring that a lot of people have died from severe respiratory symptoms or distress or whatever, pneumonia, as opposed to, well, what caused the pneumonia? Well, we don't want to talk about that very much. There are even those that are suggesting, isn't it amazing that all these coincidences are happening at once? We have an economic system that's due for an implosion. A whole lot of stuff that the Fed has been doing that's just basically off the front pages. You have an impeachment bogus circus that's going very badly for the leftists trying to cover up the Biden and Hitlery and other high crimes, misdemeanors, and outright treason. They don't want to see anybody called. As a matter of fact, isn't it interesting, too, that Nancy Pelosi and her son and family have been essentially in bed with communist China. Dianne Feinstein for 20 years had a spy driver from Chi-Com land that was reporting on her. As you know, Hunter Biden, Daddy Joe, were on the board of directors for a shell corporation, subsidiary to Burisma, but the same company was sending F-35-related technology to the Chi-Coms. So, there are those that will suggest if the Democrats were looking for a distraction from the bogus impeachment, they couldn't have gotten a better one than this, because coronavirus is literally kind of a doomsday bomb. And remember, it's not like the communist Chinese are particularly broken up about the fact that they've been looking for a way to kill a few tens of millions of people anyway. Did they release it? Did somebody else release it? That's the one of the $64 billion questions here. One thing is sure, that the bioweapon development, the unprecedented levels of transmissibility and infection here, may eventually take the impeachment circus off the front pages just when it's most beneficial to those who got caught and now want to change the subject. So when it's all said and done, folks, I'm going to suggest the following. I made this point last week. Take a read of Deuteronomy chapter 28, in particular around verse 58 or so, where the scripture says, talking about obedience, learn what's food, what's not food. If you will observe and do all the words of this Torah, stuff that's written in this book, and fear Yahuwah, well, he will take away from you the plagues of Egypt. He will, however, if you don't, it says in verse 60, he'll bring them back. All the diseases of Egypt that you were so afraid of, they will cleave unto you. They'll make you really, really sick. But wait, verse 61 is the one that I think we can't help but think, ooh, that really fits today. Also, he says, every sickness, every plague which is not even written in this book of the Torah, those will Yahuwah bring upon you till you are destroyed. You better hearken, better listen. So at this point, I guess what I would say is when it comes to physical cures, being one who has suggested for a long time that there'll come a point, I don't think we're there yet, I think we're going to see another downhill slide before we get there, when the people of the world will say, okay, we've given up on Big Brother and the fake gods, maybe we better turn back to Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. But in the meanwhile, for those of us that know that he and his word are true, great, continue doing what you're doing. Don't eat things that aren't food, like pig and shellfish. Avoid environmental toxins and poisons wherever you can. They're going to make it more and more difficult. Drink and eat the good stuff. Get yourself the vitamin C, the D3, the K2, the various healthful nutrients that your body needs. Have things like antivirals on hand. Silver is a good one. Zinc to improve the immune system. There's lots and lots of others. And let's remember, there will be economic effects, dominoes, travel bans, and even things that will follow on after that. All it takes is a few travel bans and some major quarantines to really put a kibosh to the global just-in-time economic network. We're already seeing Chinese things that won't get delivered affecting the electronics industry. Well, how much more so the things that are coming with a complete breakdown in travel and in deliveries. And if nothing else, folks, that means better have the food on hand. Better understand what you're going to need. And if you need something, for crying out loud, get it now. If you need to be somewhere, be there now. Because ultimately, the don't panic will change to something exactly the opposite. Panic, panic, panic. But those of us who know who we serve and have been walking in obedience won't have to. Because of things like Psalm 103, which says, bless Yahuwah, O my soul, and all that's within me, bless his holy name. It goes on to say, and forget not all of his benefits, who forgives all your iniquities, who heals all of your diseases, who redeems your life from destruction, and crowns you with loving kindness and tender mercies, satisfying your mouth with good things, so that your youth is renewed like the eagles. Yahuwah executes righteousness and justice for all who are oppressed. And ultimately, folks, those sound like much better promises than the package inserts on whatever it is that Big Brother's going to want to jab you with. So make your own choices and prepare while you can.